Good evening, how are you? Another steamy, hot evening here in Sydney on Boxing Day. Yes, it's interesting. The last few years or so in Sydney, we've had fairly mild Christmases. Christmases. What's the plural for... We've had some pretty mild ones. At least in Sydney. I know friends of mine in Adelaide over the last couple of years have had real scorches. This year it was pretty hot, and Boxing Day today was even more so. Really quite warm. It reminds me of that Michael Franks song where he spends a significant portion of the album talking about winter. And then... he dedicates an entire song to the fact that, oh, it's winter, so I'm going to head down to Brazil where the weather is upside down. So yes, it's summer in Australia during Christmas. Wasn't ever really that much of a big deal for me to get used to, because for most of my sisters in my life growing up in Singapore, it's summer all year round. So the idea that it would be hot and muggy and humid at Christmas seems perfectly rational and normal. And it's interesting how you internalize a lot of your feelings and emotions around a certain time of year or a certain feeling or a mood based on a few inputs. So when I'm warm, I feel relaxed and sort of the festive season comes along. Whenever I feel cold, it usually means I'm in an area where the air conditioning is too cold. Or in the case of Australia, it's the middle of the year and it's just miserable and ugh, who likes winter, right? The idea of spending Christmas sort of in winter, in cold, is just such a foreign concept. I've only ever been in a place where it's been winter around Christmas once in my life, and that was in the late 2000s. My sister and dad and I went down to Germany. It was actually for a family friend's 60th. Yeah, and so we went to Munich, we went to Frankfurt, we actually went into the Czech Republic for a bit because it was there, so why not? I had a Pilsen in Pilsen. It was actually the best beer that I have ever had. It was on tap in a little pub in Pilsen. Pilsner Urquell, I think it was the name of the beverage. It is still to this day the best beer that I've ever had. And then we went to Ireland because it was there and we'd kind of never been there. We'd been around the UK, but not to Ireland, so it made sense. It's after a wander. That was actually the year where I don't know if you remember, I think it was 2009, 2010, that winter, Northern Hemisphere winter, so summer down here. It was so cold, there was such a snowstorm and a blizzard that they shut down a whole bunch of airports and stuff. So we were supposed to fly out of Cork back to Germany, and we kind of couldn't. So we ended up just wandering around a bit more. And in fact, it was very fortuitous for us because we were driving around the Ring of Kerry and driving up to Dublin and then basically due west from there through these just achingly beautiful landscapes. And they were deserted because no one else in their right mind was driving around in that weather, and there were no tourists, because why would you? So it was just one of the highlights of my life. But that was really the only time that I've ever been in a winterscape around Christmas. Christmas to me was always very, very warm. And I mentioned on the Overnightscape Central a few episodes ago, we were talking about, I can't remember what exactly we were talking about, but I made mention of the fact that I thought it was very interesting in primary school that I had a friend who, around Christmas time, this was when I was in year one or two or something, And I remember while the whole rest of the class was decorating trees and putting up tinsel and blue and green crepe paper and making Santa hats and all of that sort of silly stuff, this one kid in my grade who I was probably one of the few people that I actually hung out with quite regularly at the time, but he was, I guess he had a pardon from the teacher, and he was putting up white banners everywhere with these really strange looking six-pointed blue stars that were sort of hollow in the middle, and then he would draw lots of blue and white stripes everywhere. I had no idea why he was doing it at the time. In fact, I kind of thought the graphics and the imagery was kind of cool, because it wasn't until many years later I was sort of sitting there of an evening like a gentleman, and I was thinking through my head, thinking, I wonder what some sort of stuff that was happening in primary school that was weird. And of course I remembered what this kid was drawing, and I thought, oh, that's the Star of David, isn't it? He must have been Jewish. That's why he wasn't doing all of that stuff. But then I was thinking about it in terms of religious iconography. My dad, being German, always made the points that for him, Christmas was never a religious holiday. And in fact, neither of my parents were religious. That's not very unusual in Australia. Australia is a pretty agnostic, apathetic sort of country when it comes to religious beliefs and whatnot. But one of the things that my dad always used to comment on growing up was that the sort of drumming it in that in fact Christmas is not even a Christian holiday. It was taken from the German pagans and their winter festivals and the solstice. And why do you think all of the imagery around Christmas is all about a very Bavarian, very German looking houses with the sort of Tudor looking houses with the snow on top, and everyone is dressed up like that and singing carols and stuff? But where do you think all that imagery came from? And it was because of these pagan holidays and rituals and traditions, the Yuletide season. So in that context, I was in that class with my Jewish friend and with all my other friends, and obviously some of them were going to carols and they were going to Sunday school. I imagine a few of them were, and I most definitely wasn't. Most of the class, I feel, most definitely weren't. We ascribed no religious significance to it at all. But I suppose for this other childhood friend of mine, that was a leap a little bit too far for him. Or maybe it could have even been that his parents had had a word with the teacher to get him out of doing that stuff. But then it's interesting comparing it now. I have I know a few Jewish people in Sydney, one of whom calls himself an atheist Jew. He says he is the most vehemently anti-religious person you can imagine. For him, Judaism is a cultural, historical thing. It's a family, community kind of thing. Like he identifies with that history. And then I know other Jewish people here who are extremely traditional and religious in that way and wouldn't celebrate Christmas at all, to the point where I know one person on Twitter who, in fact, I believe he works in Melbourne now, he doesn't live in Sydney anymore, but was not only going out of his way to say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas, which, to be honest, I do too, just because it's an easier, when so many things are happening at the same time, it's just a convenient shorthand. But he was sort of really going as far as to say that saying Merry Christmas just off the cuff to him was very insulting. I know, it's interesting. I kind of, growing up, it was never really a religious thing for me. So to have someone think that it is a religious thing when I talk about it to other people, it's an interesting concept. I was having a chat with someone about it at work recently, and they were saying the only thing they could think of was that perhaps to them, culturally speaking, the last time there was any kind of religious fervor around this holiday and for people of Jewish ancestry would have been in the whole thing with Nazi Germany and that sort of history, you can imagine why they would want to distance themselves from those sort of things. Yeah. As an aside, that was back when I was in my raging asshole atheist days. One of the comments I remember reading about at the time was people saying, "Why do people keep saying that Adolf Hitler was an atheist?" Well, despite the fact he was most obviously Roman Catholic. But anyway, I was basically going to talk about Christmas, and I ended up talking about all these taboo things you're not supposed to talk about anyway.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
The Christmas for me this year was not great. It's funny how Christmas for me was always a deeply important celebration for family reasons. My mum and my dad poured so much effort and heart and joy into this celebration, and then it was sort of cruelly taken away from us when my mum died the day before Christmas Eve. So it's this holiday, which was always such a big deal for us, suddenly became a very somber sort of season for mourning the passing of our mum to the big C at that point in time. It was really bitterly, painfully sad for a long time. It was many, many years. It was about, 2007? So, yeah, it was about 7 or 8 years before Elkie and I, my sister, could even listen to sort of going to a shopping centre and hear Christmas carols and not just burst into tears. And then in the last few years, we've sort of started to embrace it again and thought, well, you know, she poured all of her effort into doing all that stuff, and things like leaving out half-eaten cookies on the, or biscuits, as we would say here, bickies, out at the front door, because that's obviously what Santa had eaten while he was feeding the carrots that we left out to the reindeer and things like that, making these big elaborate stories about how Santa can squeeze in through keyholes. Because, of course, we don't have a chimney and we lived in apartments, so that made no sense. And then, the fact that Santa obviously wouldn't wear such heavy coats and things when he was flying around Singapore delivering stuff, because he'd probably, whatever the opposite of hypothermia is, he'd probably just cark it from that. But so, yeah, this year it was tough, but in nowhere near as serious or life-threatening as those previous ones. In fact, it was tough for a very silly reason. About a week and a half, almost 2 weeks ago, I got this really bizarre stomach bug. So I've had food poisoning before. It's awful. You get to know the seat of your toilet very intimately over these. Over those time periods. So it wasn't that bad. I just had this just really horrible gut-wrenching anytime I even drank water. It was pretty bad, and then I would spend a long time in the bathroom. I was up all hours of the night. I was very, very lucky that it happened the day or two before the end of work, so that I could really spend some time just sitting here recovering. But it meant this entire Christmas break up until this point, I've been sitting at home drinking electrolyte and water. Just kind of sad. I've basically given up most sugar because sugar's terrible and you shouldn't eat it. But I sort of afforded myself a little bit at this time of year because it's Christmas and why the hell not? But so I'm sitting there sort of nursing a stomach ache, drinking, sort of sipping water, just tiny, tiny spoonfuls of it at a time, thinking about all the cake and pudding and things that everyone else around me must be eating. What are some of these Christmas things? I mean, Australia, basically, we eat everything the Poms do around this time of year. So for us, it's always about Christmas pudding and putting, I guess, the equivalent in the US, you would probably have it as a, it's more of a fruitcake. Because what you guys over there have as pudding, we would consider just sort of a custard or a dessert or something. It's a, so yeah, you have this very, very dense fruit pudding that you douse in alcohol, you put in a bag, like a sort of a sack, and you, the traditional way of doing it is you put it in a sack and you hang it in the corner of your room for 9 months, and then you open it up at Christmas, and it's just beautiful. It's the most, one of the most amazing things. Little dollop of custard on top, and you're home free. I remember that was a big deal when I was a kid, especially around my birthday in March. My parents would start making the Christmas pudding for that year, or the pud, as they used to say. And then for the whole year, we would see this sack hanging off the corner of the ceiling in the kitchen, until finally it was ready to cut it up. And oh, you would just get that really rich, I'm not sure if it, the alcohol, whether it was brandy or wine or something, it was quite, by the time the alcohol had all evaporated out of it or sort of permeated through the cake, oh, just one of the most amazing things. And then of course the other Christmas food you must have is mince pies, which you also are supposed to have with custard. Oh, it's amazing, especially if you there are two schools of thought whether or not you're supposed to eat them cold or you're supposed to nuke them for a bit in the microwave and then eat them like that with a bit of custard on top. And then my father, being German, brought all of the amazing German Christmas feasts and stuff over from his neck of the woods. So for us, it was always the Pfeffernusse, the gingerbread with the sort of white sugary glaze on top, which was amazing. And then I'm trying to remember the name of it. There was also this, Stollen, Christmas Stollen, which is this bread cake stuff with fruit in the middle of it. And sort of, I guess you'd call it, in America, you call them candied fruit, I guess, with icing sugar on top. Oh, and then of course gingerbread. No one does gingerbread better than the Germans. So you would have that. And I still remember as a little kid, my dad making us a gingerbread house. There were really some truly treasured, beautiful memories from our kids, from our parents making all of that sort of stuff, playing the Tony Bennett Christmas album in the background. Of course, now no one listens to the Tony Bennett Christmas album anymore. It's, for the last few years, it's been the, the Michael Bublé Christmas album. Although, funnily enough, at work, a colleague of mine started playing, of course Shaggy made a reggae Christmas album, of course he did, so we're all playing that instead. Alright, so we've covered the food, we've kind of covered the music. I suppose that from a savoury point of view, the other thing you're supposed to have, which I guess is also a very British thing that we do in Australia, is you're supposed to have a Christmas roast, which, listening to my grandparents talk about it, how for them, chicken, and maybe if you're listening to this, you might have got this as well, but chicken to them was always a luxury. You wouldn't dare eat chicken unless you were able to steal it from somewhere, you know? This was really, really expensive stuff. And so you would have a winner, chicken dinner on Christmas with gravy and lots of baked potato and baked onions and pumpkin and, oh. And then, of course, you'd need to figure out some sort of a stuffing as well. So, unfortunately, I'm a pescatarian now, so I don't eat any of that sort of meat stuff anymore. But I still really like, you can make a, meat lovers will scoff at this, but in fact, you can make a really excellent gravy with onion instead. So what you do is you get a really thick sort of oniony flour sort of gravy, and then you put that over baked potatoes and stuff. It's still just as good. Oh, amazing. So you've got your savouries, you've got your sweets, gingerbread stuff, family things, memories. Yeah, I guess I was very lucky that for most of my childhood, I did have a family that did all of that sort of stuff. But I guess I was a bit melancholic this year because I was sitting there. My dad and his new partner are off in overseas over Christmas this year. to sort of celebrate his recovering heart condition. So he was off there. My sister and her partner have had a pretty brutal few months as well with work, like Clara and I have been. So they just basically had Christmas to themselves and the family dog. So it was just Clara and I this year. And we were sort of sitting there, and I feel really guilty because Clara's kind of hamstrung. She couldn't really have anything nice and tasty because she felt guilty eating it in front of me as I sat there with my disgusting salty electrolyte fluid and water and going to the bathroom 10 times an hour. But I suppose the fact that I can leave my apartment and go for a wander around here this evening talking with you fine people about Christmas means that it can't have been all bad.
Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
I got a bit of follow-up and feedback which I needed to get to. I don't think I'll get time to it this evening, but I did want to call out that it was incredibly exciting to see Mike Booty and Shambles Constant both on the Underground again. If you haven't listened to any of their shows, check out Radio Free Shambles and check out the Midnight Citizen on the Overnightscape Underground if you are starved of audio material this season. They're always a delight. Very, very interesting people. And in fact, I think they were Clara's favourites as well. I caught her listening to them many, many a time. So looking forward to that. And yeah, in terms of just personal stuff, sort of public internet facing things, one thing that was kind of fun over this break is being essentially bedridden or sort of sitting there hunched over in a chair for many, many hours and sort of a week or so meant that I had a sufficient amount of time to do some just general cleanup and stuff on my blog. If you go to rubiner.com, I just found so many blog posts with just malformed metadata and posts that were listed as drafts for some reason that was sort of 6 years old. So I just flipped them all from draft to published. Why not? And then I finally, in the process of importing a bunch of my other secondary blogs over to that as well. So if you go to rubiner.com/annex, I did have a side blog for many years called the Rubinode Annex, which is where I put random crap that I didn't want to have clutter up my blog. See, because here's the thing. Blogging experts tell you that you should keep your blog to a minimum few topics at a time. Remember this in the early 2000s? There were these self-aggrandizing, self-entitled blogging experts, and they had all of these tips and things that you were supposed to follow. So, like Fight Club, you weren't supposed to talk about blogging on your blog because, again, heaven forbid you talk about something you're interested in, and you're supposed to only talk about one or two topics at a time. So naturally, I've ignored both of those things. And interesting how most of those so-called blogging experts, I go to their blogs and they haven't written anything in a decade. So nuts to them. So anyway, I've kind of internalized a lot of that over the years and I'm trying to expel it. Like much of this electrolyte that I've been drinking that tastes bloody awful. But if you go to rubiner.com/annex, I've been importing a bunch of my old side blogs. I had a dozen or so of them all over the place. And it's just a pain to maintain them all. Just put them all in one place and be done with it. Maybe I'll recategorize them at some point, but for now, that's where they're going. One blog that I haven't yet imported yet was, for many years, I was the maintainer of a very humble blog called Parked on Footpaths, which was this delightful chronology of people, sort of cataloging with full license plates in view, people who indiscriminately parked their vehicles on footpaths. Because for some reason, it was becoming an epidemic when I was living in Mascot in Sydney, just the number of people who would park their car on the footpath. And especially in Mascot, there are certain streets where the footpath is pretty narrow and you've got a building butting up against the side of it. So the only way that you could safely walk was to walk around the car, sort of pressed up against it, so you don't have traffic hit you from the side. It was it was really frustrating. So I started taking photographs and keeping a record of all of these things for future reference. I'm not sure if any law enforcement official or anyone ever made use of that, but anyway, yeah, I thought, why not? I'll just import all that crap and my ruminations and pontifications and thoughts on all of that stuff. And then the final piece is just, I suppose I shouldn't be shocked, but I'm quite amazed at how much of the internet is just disintegrating and disappearing into the ether. It really seems like the only things that will still be around in a few years are posts that people have put on Facebook. Because it seems like Google can't maintain a social network for more than a few months before losing interest and killing it. They've done it how many times now? And just in general, just all of these third-party sites that I spent so much of my life contributing to and adding stuff to have all just disappeared. And after a while, it gets a bit disheartening when this happens, until you remember that most of these sites are run by humans. And humans have different priorities that happen in their lives. Or maybe the site doesn't become profitable or loses profitability, or for whatever reason that's outside their control. Maybe they just lose interest. Either way, these things just drop like flies. And so I've been reassessing a lot of stuff and sort of thinking that if I want to maintain some digital history or sort of preserve some of the stuff that I've been posting, it's really incumbent upon all of us to do it ourselves, because obviously these other services have no interest in doing it for us. I think the one that I really regret the most was, do you remember Gowalla? I think they were, despite the logo being a kangaroo and Gowalla sounding like koala, they were actually out of Texas. But they were a geolocation-based, what would you call it, social network, I guess. So you would share where you were at any point in time, which some people didn't understand, and that was fine. You didn't have to do it. But yeah, I found it very useful for tracking, especially when you were on holidays. You would say, oh, you know, this we went to this restaurant, and this was our local train station, and it was fun. Most of our family trips around Europe, I checked into all the places using this Gowalla app. Foursquare was around at that time as well, but it was limited to the US, whereas Gowalla was a global thing, so it made sense. Yeah, and then I think they got bought or some silly thing like that, and so they did that blog post saying, we are excited to be in, you know, going into this new era, and obviously we'll have this tool to let you export all of your check-ins so that you can import it into somewhere else or do something else with it, whatever you choose. And then they promptly just shut the whole thing down without doing what they promised, and all of our check-ins and stuff just vanished overnight. So all of our traveling around Europe and the history and fun around that all just went gone. So yeah, I was still kind of a bit bitter about that, and unfortunately archive.org has no record of any of it either. So it really seems like if you want to preserve some of your digital history, you got to do it yourself. Anyway, that should probably do it for now. I hope you had a nice Christmas, if that's your thing. Otherwise, I hope you had a nice break. I hope you got a break, even if you don't celebrate that sort of stuff. I know Christmas can be a really trying time. Believe me, I can personally speak for the fact that sometimes the break instills and makes you feel a lot of very painful things that you would rather forget, and sometimes you just don't want to be reminded of all of this sort of stuff. And so when people wish you a Merry Christmas, it grates, because you kind of think, yeah, please don't. I understand. But yeah, assuming that you haven't had something like that happen, and it's otherwise a time of joy or even quiet solitude, I hope you got some. Seems like we all need more of that these days. Thanks.